Hey everybody, before we get into the show, I do want to let you know that we have another live show coming up Thursday, April 18th at 6 p.m. at Maya Cinemas in North Las Vegas. We are going to be talking about the vampire ballerina horror comedy Abigail. This movie looks like it's going to be a lot of fun. And joining me to talk about it are my wife, Gina Mazzoni, film student Perry Markle, and filmmaker and Sin City Horror Club founder Nick Woods. It's going to be a great time, great conversation. There's an enter to win contest going on right now on my website, piecingpod.com. You can find a link in the show notes. Enter to win some tickets. And otherwise, tickets are available from Maya Cinemas. And I hope to see you there on Thursday, April 18th at 6 p.m. Right, welcome to another episode of Piecing It Together, the podcast where we take a look at a new movie and try to figure out what movies inspired it. And today on the show, we are finally getting to talk about a Sam Raimi movie. I certainly bring up Evil Dead enough on this podcast, but he's back with a new movie, back to the Marvel franchise, although his first time in the actual MCU. We are talking about Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness. It is the second Doctor Strange movie. It is the 28th MCU movie. Ridiculous. But it's, of course, making a ton of money, and everybody's seeing it, and we are going to talk about it with returning guest Robert Yannis Jr., and we have a great conversation coming up. Lots of puzzle pieces, of course, lots of Sam Raimi in there, and lots of other stuff as well. Before we get to the conversation, I do want to remind you, as always, to make sure you are subscribed to Piecing It Together wherever you listen to podcasts. You can rate and review us on Apple Podcasts or Good Pods or Podchaser or Spotify, wherever you're listening. If there's a 5-star button, we'd appreciate it if you'd hit that. And follow us on social media at Piecing Pod. Don't forget about our Popcorn and Puzzle Pieces Facebook group also, where we continue the conversation about all the movies we talk about here on the show. So with all that said, let's talk about Doctor Strange. All right, Robert Yannis Jr. is back with us on the podcast to talk about Doctor Strange 2 in... No, it's not called Doctor Strange. It's called Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness. we're talking Sam Raimi. That's the important thing here. How's it going, exactly. Robert?
It's going great, David. Thanks for having me back.
Yeah, definitely. I'm happy to have you. I was trying to think, like, who should I try to get for this episode? And then I was like... Who do I know that loves Evil Dead as much as I do? Because, of course, this is going to be a celebration of all things Sam Raimi and Bruce Campbell and Evil Dead and all that stuff. And, of course, we talked about Evil Dead 2 over on your podcast and had a great time doing that. And so I thought you'd be a great one for this.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And on my show, we just finished doing the Raimi Spider-Man trilogy.
Yeah, so I heard Josh Bell on there. Number 2.
So I've done the Evil Dead movies and the Spider-Man movie. So both Raimi franchises have been covered.
Maybe we'll get the crime wave one of these days.
yeah, there you go.
So, yeah, we're in Marvel territory here, of course. This is the latest of the MCU. I believe the 28th movie, if I'm not mistaken.
Sounds right.
Now we've got the TV shows to contend with, too. And something that I noticed going into this, and we should probably just kind of chat about for a second before we get into puzzle pieces, is I haven't watched the shows, but I've had enough spoiled that I wasn't, like, lost or anything. I understood the whole arc of the WandaVision show, and that's a big jumping off point for this movie, even though it's Doctor Strange's name in the title. It's very much like a follow-up to the WandaVision show. Are you a fan of the shows?
Yes, I am. I've watched all of them. I've started to get a little bit of fatigue, not with the movies so much, but with the shows, because we're on the 6th Marvel Studios show in a little over a year. So I've seen the first episode of Moon Knight as of this recording, and then haven't jumped in the rest of it. But all the other shows I've seen up to this point, WandaVision was the first, and I still think the best, and feels the freshest and the most. I don't know if any of these shows are really necessary, but the most necessary as far as building out characters who that show creates a love story for Wanda and Vision that's completely off screen in the movies, which I think is the interesting thing, because they meet in Age of Ultron and Civil War. He obviously cares about her, and there's some mutual attraction, but not like a romance. Then we see them in Infinity War, they're together, and then he dies and she's dusted. And so if we don't really see them as a couple until WandaVision, I think that's kind of critical for building everything. And that was actually something I was going to ask you, because I know you're not really big on the Marvel shows. How did that all play for you, that transition? Because a lot of people who even watch the shows have been, you know, kind of divisively debating whether Wanda's, and obviously there's no spoiler warning on this.
Yeah, spoiler away for sure.
Obviously, Wanda's transition here into a full-on villain, that it, you know, feels a little rough to even people who watch the show. So going just by the movies, how was that for you coming into this and be like, oh wow, okay, she's like full Dark Phoenix in this.
This is going to be the rare time where I say, thank God for Twitter for spoiling things for me, because, otherwise I'd have had no idea. I'd have been like, what is going on here? Like, you know, because if you're just going off the movies, especially if you're going off like Doctor Strange to Doctor Strange 2, I mean, I know obviously you need to incorporate all of the different MCU movies in order to really follow the story of all this stuff. So you can't just go off the first Doctor Strange, but there's so much that you kind of need to know from that show. And I really can't imagine somebody who doesn't spend their entire day on Twitter, like tweeting about their movie podcast and seeing, oh, whoops, there we go. I guess now I know what happened on WandaVision. Like, if it wasn't for that, I have a feeling I'd have been incredibly lost.
Yeah. It's the first time the shows feel, like I said, necessary, I guess, to really follow the emotional arc of a character.
It really does seem that way. But we're here now. We're into Doctor Strange 2. And, I'm sure Wanda is going to come up a lot through these puzzle pieces. I know they do for me. Yep. But something that I wanted to do, usually I'll throw to my guests for the first piece, but I think we should kind of get the elephant in the room out of the way first. This is Sam Raimi's first movie in, I believe, 9 years. And we're big Sam Raimi fans, as I've already established. There's a lot of Raimi in this, so I think we should talk about some of that first, and we'll just kind of go back and forth talking about the various Raimi projects that may have been an influence on this movie. And this movie isn't written by Sam Raimi. It was written by Michael Waldron, I believe, who wrote some of the Loki show?
Think. Yeah.
So, and a bunch of other TV and stuff like that. So, it definitely has other people's fingerprints on it, including, of course, Marvel's. They're not going to let, even if he's Sam Raimi, they're not going to let him just do his own thing. But there's a lot of Raimi influence here. The first one I wanted to bring up, maybe the weirdest one out of the bunch, would be Oz the Great and Powerful, which I've only seen once, but when I first saw it, I was actually at a community event here in my neighborhood. I used to work with the community, putting on events for kids in the neighborhood and stuff like that. And we do a movie night every so often, and we showed that, and I had never seen it. And I just couldn't believe my eyes as I was sitting there watching Army of Darkness for Kids, which is what Oz the Great and Powerful is.
I need to go back and watch that movie. I haven't seen it since theaters, and I was like, I remember it as being Alice in Wonderland, just overblown, over CG Disney, vibe that was kind of the big early stages of them remaking every IP they could get their hands on.
Sure.
So I need to go back and check it out now that I'm much more well-versed on my Raimi, having now seen pretty much all his movies. The obvious connection there is that's a Disney film, and this is a Disney film, and that's sort of he's kind of in house with Disney, I guess, those last two movies. So we'll see if that continues or not. But
you get the Raimi kind of like action and his kind of like visual cues and his kind of over the top fun and weirdness and exciting stuff, but watered down a little bit for kids. And I feel like in parts, it is like that here in Doctor Strange 2, but then when he does get a chance to like really let loose, this movie gets to be a lot of fun. I had a lot of fun with Doctor Strange 2 for sure, but there's certainly moments where you kind of feel it, that it's like, oh, wait, we are still stuck in the Disney machine too, though.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then there are scenes where you're like, whoa, damn.
Yeah, exactly.
There were so many times, David, during this movie that I was just like, wow, Disney let him get away with that. It's just like.
And those are the best parts.
The Illuminati stuff, which we'll get into, and then like the music fight and all this other stuff. Like, wow, that's insane. They let this happen in a good way, obviously. I mean, I feel like we should just get out of the way. One of the big ones, the Spider-Man trilogy is an obvious one. I mean, I just spent three episodes talking about those movies. I spent 3 hours talking about the third one. So a lot of content to dig into in those movies alone. But I would say that those, more than the X-Men film before it, or anything, those really set the template for what Marvel on screen could do, what it could be, and how it could be true to the comics, but also fit into, you know, mainstream entertainment for people that don't know who Thanos is at the end of the Avengers or anything. Sure. And so, I mean, obviously that carries on here, but also just sort of the color palette. People love to rip into the grayness of Marvel movies on film Twitter, they're not entirely wrong. Here, there's a lot more color. It's a lot more vibrant than most of the Marvel movies. Even little things like early on in the film, he's at Christine's wedding, and there's the attack in the street, the big eyeball monster who's like Gargantos or something like that. And he kind of snaps his fingers or whatever, and his cloak goes on and he floats out of the building. I was like, oh, this feels like a Doctor Strange movie directed by the guy that did Spider-Man 2.
Sure, absolutely.
It perfectly captures those moments where being a normal person and being a superhero collide. And I think you get a little bit of that, especially early on, before we start going through the multiverse and everything. And so that was just, it felt like something out of one of his Spider-Man movies, but with this character. So I really enjoyed seeing that. And this is, you know, his first Marvel movie since Spider-Man 3. It's sort of a return to form for him, but also that movie was sort of divided fans quite a bit. So it's fun to kind of see him back playing in this sandbox again.
Yeah, you kind of got to wonder, like, how long Feige has had it in the back of his mind, like, one of these days, we're getting Raimi back into all this. Like, you know that he must have wanted to, even though he likes to have, like, a total grip on the direction of everything regardless of who's directing, but still he must have wanted that at some point. I believe he even got his start like working on those movies, didn't he?
I think so. Yeah. Every once in a while I go back and look through Kevin Feige's filmography, and he worked on those Spider-Man movies. He worked on Daredevil and I think the Blade Trinity and Punisher Warzone, like the Fantastic Four movies from the 2000s. So I feel like little by little, he's going to acknowledge all of those things that he's worked on as canon in the MCU. We're getting there.
Nice. Well, of course, we got to bring up the Evil Dead movies, especially Army of Darkness, although you get little bits and pieces of the others as well, especially Evil Dead 2. But I mean, there's a Book of the Dead in this movie. I mean, right off the bat. I mean, come on. Like, that is totally Army of Darkness and the entire Evil Dead series. Also, the slam zooms, I think you would call it. The evil doppelgangers. Doctor Strange becomes a zombie, an evil version of himself. Like, there's all of that kind of stuff, the manic energy of what we associate with the Evil Dead movies, horror comedy, horror, like straight up horror. I mean, there's all of that in there, which is all of the touchstones of that series and what we love so much about it. And so it's, you know, it's still, as we're saying, there's a push-pull between like it being a Disney Marvel movie and it being a Sam Raimi movie, but you still get enough of that there's a lot of fun in that if you're a fan of those movies.
Yeah, definitely. I also saw a little bit of Darkman in this too. I think partially with the Doctor Strange corpse sort of being all mutilated and rotten, kind of like Darkman's face is like melted away. Partially a good person sort of reemerging and being perceived as a monster by the people that they love. As kind of similar to Wanda and her kids in this movie, and also Darkman being a comic book movie that's not based on a comic book, but feels like a comic book. It has that sort of over the top energy. It has a lot of the hallmarks that we would have come to associate with Raimi and Spider-Man later on. And also it's just a good opportunity to shout out Darkman, which I feel like is in that when you get Raimi and his genre zone, because he's done more mature, air quotes, mature films like The Simple Plan and The Gift and For Love of the Game and things like that. But when you're in like horror comic book zone, Sam Raimi, I feel like Darkman is often the film that's sort of overlooked by you know, perhaps younger fans that didn't really know about him until Spider-Man. So yeah. I feel like that's just a good opportunity to direct people to Darkman, because I want a legacy sequel or something, some kind of refresh of Darkman, please.
And I think it might happen. I actually haven't seen it since I was like a teenager, and I'm looking forward to revisiting it one of these days, because I'm in full Sam Raimi mode right now. I just watched The Quick and the Dead the other day, and I'm looking forward to rewatching my next one. I was going to mention Drag Me to Hell for the first time in quite a while. Hopefully this week. That's like next on my watch list. But you know, people are talking about the mean spiritedness of Drag Me to Hell and of a lot of stuff in Raimi, which I think is just kind of ridiculous. I think it's more like the world kind of sucks and let's have fun, you know?
Watch this terrible person have terrible things happen to them.
Yeah, why not, you know? And so, you know, of course, you know, again, spoiler alert, you know, we get into spoilers. You have to when you're talking about the influences and all this stuff. Yeah. At the very end of the movie, we get that end scene that's basically, although it is upended by the mid-credit scene then, when it turns out everything's kind of all right, sort of. But Doctor Strange, it turns out, is now that dark Doctor Strange from the other multiverse with the eyeball in his forehead. And so that's kind of like a callback to the Drag Me to Hell ending.
The other thing I think is interesting about Drag Me to Hell is it's Raimi trying to do his Evil Dead thing in an age of CGI. And so Drag Me to Hell is him trying to split the difference and do some practical, some CG. And I think he pulls it off to great effect in that movie and largely in this one as well. So I think that was his first experience with really major horror sci-fi, and it except for like some of the things he's done, and obviously there's some horror elements in some of the Spider films, you know, specifically the Doc Ock surgery scene and some of the things with Venom. He's trying to do some of that same horror vibe, but I think Drag Me to Hell is him trying to do like, okay, how could I do that with this technology and use it but not lean on it too much and still have some of my practical effects and makeup and things like that. He literally covered Alison Lohman with like all kinds of viscous fluids in that movie, and so I think it was a good it's a good like kind of stepping stone between Evil Dead and this movie.
Absolutely. So are there any other Raimi movies you think we should shout out before we move on?
I mean, those were the big ones. If you didn't mention Drag Me to Hell, I was going to. So I'm glad somebody got it out there.
Awesome. All right, cool. Well, then let's move on to some other pieces. What do you got for your next one?
Well, this one, credit for this one goes to the people in the theater sitting behind me at Doctor Strange, who was like, this kind of reminds me of that Stephen King. And they were like talking to each other for a second, like, oh, this. And they're like, Carrie. And I was like, oh, I'm going to mention that on the podcast.
All right.
I definitely see a lot of Carrie. And I'm so glad that they said that, because if I didn't bring that up, I would have felt dumb for not thinking of it for this episode. So much of that, the iconography of Wanda kind of covered in blood or oil at some point. It's the Ultron bots too. I think that's how this tries to get around being so graphic, that she just tears apart the Ultron bots and has, I think, oil on her face and stuff at one point.
Yeah.
Her, you know, having these insane telekinetic powers, being kind of out of control and all of that. There's a lot of Carrie sort of baked into the at least the visual imagery in this film.
Yeah, absolutely. And I had Carrie on my list as well. I love that you brought some puzzle pieces from the audience. That's wonderful.
just worked out. Yeah. It just worked out that way. Never happens.
That's great. Yeah, I think a lot of my pieces, they're either going to have to do with multiverse related stuff or Wanda's character, because quite frankly. And I feel like this is, you know, one of the big quibbles I have with this film is that it is more of a WandaVision sequel than it is a Doctor Strange sequel. And I love Elizabeth Olsen, and I think that this character is great. It's just, you know, it's supposed to be Doctor Strange too, you know, it's not supposed to be WandaVision too. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, she gets to do so much in this. There's so much to her character in this that there's a lot to it. And I think it's going to come up a lot through this conversation. I'll go to my next piece, which is, I'm going to bring up two things in one here. The first one's probably an obvious one for anyone who listens to the show. It's The Matrix for the mouth scene, of course. And, you know, in the first Matrix with Agent Smith, what good is a phone call if you're unable to speak? And here, Scarlet Witch says to Black Bolt, "What mouth?" about his voice powers, and then he proceeds to explode his own brain by speaking within himself.
Which, by the way, props to Marvel for that deep cut. That actor, Anson Mount, played that character on the Inhumans show that literally no one watched, that everyone hated, that lasted less than a season, and still, you know, they were like, no, no, we're going to bring him in. We're going to acknowledge that that kind of counts in one of the multiverses of this whole thing.
Absolutely. And I think that that is great. Like, honestly, even though I, you know, like I said, I didn't watch the shows. I barely know who Reed Richards is, you know, like, yeah. I don't like have that understanding because I've watched the MCU movies and that's basically it, and the Spider-Mans. So I'm not as deep of a fan as some people are going to be, but I think it's awesome to have all those kinds of Easter eggs and to be able to call back to those things.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And then The Matrix is one I had, but I was going to not mention it because I know that you and Erica brought it up on the Everything Everywhere All at Once episode, which I guess I can put that out there as a quasi puzzle piece. And since that was such a recent film, I'll also throw in another multiverse one, Happy Death Day to You, which is incidentally a film I'm going to be covering on my podcast in the coming weeks, which is very much the concept of the life you could have had. Also, you know, screw it. Also, we'll throw Sliding Doors in there. The Gwyneth Paltrow movie from, 1997, I think? Something like that? Maybe? They're all about the life you could have had, the decisions you could have made. And specifically with Happy Death Day to You, there's a choice that the character in that movie, Tree, has to make, that she can stay in the alternate universe and live this life where her mother is alive, or go back to where she came from. And the idea being that if she stays in this universe, this isn't her life. There's another her that belongs in that universe. Sure. And Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness has this very similar question with Wanda. If she goes to, Earth 838, where the alternate Wanda is, she's pushing that Wanda out of her own life.
Right,
and taking over and robbing that Billy and Tommy of their mother. So it very much has this very similar sort of dilemma of, yeah, you can live that life that you think you want, but you're upending someone else's existence in order to do that. And I think that's a really interesting idea that Doctor Strange, Happy Death Day to You, and Everything Everywhere All at Once tackle in really interesting ways.
And to that point, to bring it back to The Matrix, also the recent Matrix Resurrections with the Trinity character, whether or not she's going to take over this person who's just kind of gone on living as this other character that Carrie Ann Moss is playing, got married, had kids, but it's Trinity and we want her to still be Trinity, you know? And so, she has to make that decision whether or not to be the other person from the other universe, in that case, from the real world. So there's a lot of movies that are dealing with that and the consequences of switching universes, switching your place in the world. And by the way, Everything Everywhere All at Once, obviously we're going to say too new to be an actual puzzle piece, but how did we get two multiverse movies in one year that both feature people getting mustard squirted on themselves? what are the odds? Absolutely ridiculous. So I'll go into another piece. One thing in the movie that I was thinking, I kind of wish there were more jumping through different universes, because I thought that was fun to the red light and the green light are switched around, or there's pizza balls. Shout out to our boy
Pizza
Bruce
Papa
Campbell, the Pizza Papa. I felt for the little bit where we are learning about the different universes, which I wish there was more of that, kind of felt a little like Demolition Man when we're in the future and learning about all the little tiny ways
three
that
seashells.
The future is different. The seashells, of course. and all those little things that you get to find out. And it's fun using these alternate universes as a way of just having those little changes, little things you can make a little list of and be like, oh yeah, I noticed that change and this change and all these little different things. And that kind of brought me back to Demolition Man.
That's a good one. That's a good one. I was thinking sort of in a similar vein. I had a little bit of when they finally landed on, again, Earth 838, I think, and it's everything is backwards, and it's everything seems a little...
How do you keep track? I have no idea.
I know, it gets really convoluted. It's only going to get worse, David, as we go through the multiverse. Everything seems a little too shiny, a little too clean, a little too perfect, and then obviously the dark underbelly of what's going on, what happened with the Illuminati, and what that version of Strange actually ended up turning into. It felt a little like Back to the Future too, when they go through to 2015 and everything is all neon signs and there's the holographic Jaws poster. And then, you know, Marty kind of uncovers his own personal darkness, which is, well, actually that's kind of the alternate, I guess that's the alternate timeline, but we're dealing with like shiny new, like seemingly utopian environment, but with like this darkness, sense of doom underpinning it. And I think them kind of walking around that version of Earth and sort of looking around and kind of acquainting themselves with, I got a lot of Doc Brown and Marty McFly vibes.
Nice. Yeah, absolutely. And again, like, yeah, it's kind of hard to like separate like a different universe from just the future. Like it's kind of like similar ideas in the way they change things up. So I love that. Back to the Future too, as a piece here. That's great. I will go to another piece. Let's go Inception, you know, talking about, you know, things where there's different universes, you know, in Inception, we're going from within a dream to a dream to a dream, and everything can be like screwed up by messing with one dream to mess with the other. And here, I think it's called an incursion. Is that what it's called? Where they might
two universes collide, I guess.
Yeah. And everybody just dies. And yeah, so there's just like big stakes to screwing up the switching between the universes. And of course, that also brings back to the whole dilemma with the Wanda character and taking over another person and basically just scrambling reality for those people. And so, you know, Inception is another movie where like you're switching between these different timelines, different universes, different whatever it is. And there's lots of like rules to follow and lots of sci-fi stuff to keep track of. And it gets, you know, really head trippy, but that's part of what we come to like a Doctor Strange movie for.
Yeah, absolutely. One, I was trying to avoid mostly Marvel movies for this episode because it'd be very easy to be like, well, all 27 previous movies in the MCU and WandaVision, but those are not puzzle pieces. Those are continuation. That's literally the same franchise. This hasn't officially been brought into the MCU yet, but I had to throw out Deadpool 2 for the obvious taking an extended period to introduce an whole new set of characters only to rapidly kill them all off. You know, in there it's X-Force, so we meet all these characters, the whole recruitment montage of them bringing in all these other heroes that are going to go on this mission with Deadpool and Cable and Domino. And here we meet the Illuminati, all these cameos that everyone's talking about. And then we watch all of them get brutally murdered. Like, again, this is where everyone is up in arms about the PG-13. We get to see Patrick Stewart's Charles Xavier get killed for the third or fourth time, which might be the most shocking because everyone's like, oh, they're going to connect it. It's the one from the animated series. And it was Marvel just messing with us. We think it's unclear. It's unclear if John Krasinski is Reed Richards or if that was just to get us all to shut up. Either way, I both am, as a viewer, kind of frustrated that they spent so much time on that, because part of me is like, well, you spent all that just so you can, like, it didn't go anywhere, just to build up the stakes of Wanda's power. But on the other hand, you know, respect for them to just be like, you want all these cameos? Look at all these cameos. Now they're dead. Now what, film Twitter? Good luck. Yeah. So how did you feel about that sequence? Did you like it? Or are you like, this feels like it's taking away from the Doctor Strange? We already have Wanda taking away a lot of the spotlight from Doctor Strange. Not that I'm complaining. But did you feel like this was another unnecessary kind of distraction?
I mean, I'm so torn on it because I do feel like it's an unnecessary distraction, but it was really fun. And I love the idea. As someone who's kind of an outsider looking in, I'm like, haha, nerds, you know? So that it was a great sequence. It was really fun. I don't know if it was necessary, but it was fun to watch. And it's fun to see the fallout of it. I'll also say to your Deadpool 2 puzzle piece, also, you've got the kid that has to travel around with our hero, who here we're introduced to America Chavez. Chavez, who may or may not be a big, you know, character going forward. It's really hard to tell post Endgame who is going to stick around and who isn't in the in this whole overall series. But there, it certainly seems like they're setting her up for more big things.
It's all speculation. Everyone's assuming that they're building to Young Avengers. I know she's a part of that team, so yeah, I'm sure we'll see her around somewhere. I think it's interesting that they have a character that could just universe hop, so they can literally be like, "Ooh, we need a, you know, a mutant. Come back with Hugh Jackman. Here's Wolverine. He's going to join us for this adventure." Like, you can, it's like a shortcut. Now they don't have to constantly rationalize why Patrick Stewart is here or why, you know, Tobey Maguire shows up or whatever. It's just like they, she could just hold on. Let me make a quick visit to that other universe.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I'll go with The Witch, Robert Eggers' The Witch, as a puzzle piece. Again, we're talking about Wanda. Again, it's basically Wanda's movie. But, you know, is this character bad because of the expectations we're putting on this young woman for what, you know, she should want and what, you know, what she should see as a positive future? You know, this is what she wants. She wants a family. She wants to have this this whole thing from the TV show that I know nothing about, but I can at least, you know, draw the lines and understand where she's coming from. I know this has been a big part of the, I don't want to say controversy because it's more so the R rating is the controversy, but I would say maybe just the differing opinions online about how successful this movie is whether or not, you know, Wanda should be treated as a bad guy, bad girl,
right.
But, and she very much is in this movie. And I think that kind of goes back to the whole witch thing and witches being portrayed as bad in basically every movie.
Yeah, that no. And the witch kind of reckons with that. Like, you can see that ending as triumphant or, you know, disturbing or both.
On how you look at
it. I think
it.
It's kind of a little bit of both. I think it's supposed to be a little bit of both. That character, Thomason, in that film. And I also had the witch, by the way.
Nice.
She's in a much better place at the end in a way than she is at the beginning. Yeah. It took the death of her family and her becoming a witch and everything for that to happen. But hey, who am I to stand in the way of her happiness? but it's also, you know, this movie, a lot of, especially female film critics I've seen have take issue with the way that her, you know, Wanda uses her motherhood as her justification for what she's doing. But you know, on a more objectively, she does give Strange lots of warnings. Listen, you know, you give me that one girl, you're willing to protect that one girl and let all these people die for that. You know, that's sort of the ethos of the Marvel movies. It goes back to Infinity War, where Captain America's like, we don't trade lives. And Doctor Strange is very much the same kind of thing, which is interesting because in Infinity War, he was like, I don't care if you die or Spider-Man dies or whatever, I'm going to protect the time stone. So I think that's sort of his arc here, is kind of believing in people as opposed to just, you know, the mission. And it's, you know, in direct contrast with hers, obviously. And that's, I think, what makes it such an interesting film. Whether you love it or hate it, it's a conversation starter. And I think that's something we haven't had from a Marvel movie in a while, other than, ooh, wasn't that cool when the portal opened and Andrew Garfield jumped through?
It sure was cool, though. So
It was cool.
People were happy. People were very happy. So what do you got for your next one?
I have a couple to lean into the horror of it all. It's specifically inspired by that moment where they are hiding from Wanda and she's using the reflections to come out of the mirror dimension, which what a cool sequence
scene.
That was.
Yeah.
And she climbs through like a gong, I think. Mm-hmm. And she twists and contorts her body in order to do so. And that simultaneously reminded me of The Ring with Samara coming out of the television and the 2017 It with Pennywise sort of all twisted up in a refrigerator, I think it is in that film. And just the contortions that her body was doing throughout felt very in line with both of those films. And it's, again, part of the kind of imagery that I was like, I can't believe that Kevin Feige let this stand. Like, they're selling toys and everything from this movie. And there's little kids probably going to be traumatized from watching this kind of stuff. As an adult, I loved it. But as a father with a five-year-old, I'm like, well, she's not watching this for a while.
Yeah, she's going to have to wait until the next phase at least.
Yeah, we'll be on phase 7 or something by then. But yeah, so I really appreciated all just how far this movie went with some of the horror imagery.
Yeah, no, that's great. I had The Ring on my list as well, and nice. Yeah, that whole sequence is just so cool. And you're right. I mean, they do let him go really far with that, with making it genuinely creepy the way that she's coming out of that and just writhing around and all that stuff. Some really cool stuff there.
Yeah,
that actually speaks to my last puzzle piece then, which is really not so much a specific movie. Although I guess I would use Poltergeist, but also maybe Raiders of the Lost Ark or maybe Gremlins, just intense PG-13 movies that really push that limit before getting the R. And this, of course, comes back to this conversation we're having about, you know, how violent, how scary is this movie? You know, it's not particularly gory necessarily, mm-hmm. but Sam Raimi gets to do a lot of fun horror tricks that are probably pretty scary for kids. And, you know, in the 80s, I think we had a lot more of that. Like, it was actually, things were a lot scarier back then, and they've kind of shied away from it in mainstream less than R movies lately. I remember, actually, another one you could kind of throw to the list is Shazam a couple of years ago. Had yeah. a lot of that kind of, like, scary kind of, you know,
that
imagery.
That scene in the boardroom specifically.
It's yeah. just like,
yeah.
And really it totally intense. Reminded me of an 80s movie in that way. And so, yeah, I feel like people used to do it a lot more back then. And we kind of, I don't know what happened that we got scared of scaring kids, but maybe that's back. We'll see.
Yeah. Well, first of all, I also had Poltergeist and Beetlejuice and all those like Amblin-y early mid-late 80s stuff that you had. I even had Aliens because I know the Waldron kind of referenced that for the Illuminati sequence, how
nice.
The xenomorphs knock off all of the Marines sort of to build up to like the stakes and just how badass you know
awesome.
These aliens are. So I guess that's the one I'll go with for this turn is Aliens, because I agree with you, like there is a sort of horror sci-fi vibe going on here that I feel like hasn't really been seen very much since the 80s. It's scary, but it's also like it's also not, you know, Exorcist kind of level disturbing. It's scary right. fun, and it's maybe too intense for small kids, but like 12-year-olds will go see this and be like, oh my god, can you believe this, you know?
Yeah,
it'll be right in that zone for those kids who you know probably will then get them hopefully to go back and look at some of Raimi's own other movies, the ones
yes.
that they're ready for.
This would probably have been like kids like us when we were kids, like our favorite movie, like
yeah.
when we saw it, and it would have opened our minds to so much crazy shit. But nowadays, yeah, I don't know. I don't know if kids are into this kind of stuff, but you know, I guess we'll see. I mean, it's certainly making money. We'll
yeah.
see when more kids get to see it. But yeah, do you have any other pieces you wanted to bring up?
I had also Harry Potter and Lord of the Rings, kind of magical battles. There's a scene where Doctor Strange and Scarlet Witch are facing off with kind of blasting each other. Very Harry and Voldemort. I had Buffy the Vampire Slayer, the TV show.
Okay.
Good witch going bad, sort of corrupted
yeah.
by dark magic. Very similar to that. I had a couple Disney movies. Moana actually kind of ends with the villain sort of turning good, or like, I don't know if you've seen Moana, but there's like this dark volcano mountain that at the end, when Moana kind of sees that character for who they are, they sort of soften and brighten up. And it kind of showed me, it kind of reminded me of that here, where America realizes she can't overpower Scarlet Witch. So she actually gives her what she wants and basically shows
okay.
her who she is.
Yeah,
by bringing her to that earth and letting her see how the kids react to her and what the
yeah.
damage that she's really causing.
That's funny, because I had that as a note on my list of like, find a movie where something like that happens, where the villain can't be stopped, but you know
right.
has to basically be talked out
yeah.
of her own plan by seeing her own, you know, her own faults. But
exactly.
yeah, I couldn't think of one for that, so that's great.
There you go. And it's a Disney movie too.
There you go.
And Hocus Pocus, because that also has a movie where a corpse is sort of reanimated. Here it's by possession, there it's by witchcraft, like resurrecting the soul of the person through their corpse. But
yeah.
it's still seeing that sort of reminded me of something from that movie.
Awesome. Well, I'll go down the finished puzzle here, and then we'll get into some closing thoughts on Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness. We talked about Oz the Great and Powerful, the Spider-Man trilogy, the Evil Dead trilogy, Darkman, and Drag Me to Hell. That was a whole bunch of Sam Raimi. Then we got into Carrie, The Matrix and The Matrix Resurrections, Happy Death Day to You, Sliding Doors, Everything Everywhere All at Once, of course, had to just show up somewhere in this. Demolition Man, Back to the Future 2, Inception, Deadpool 2, The Witch, The Ring, and It. Poltergeist, Beetlejuice, Aliens, Shazam, Harry Potter, Lord of the Rings, Buffy the Vampire Slayer, and Moana. Oh, and Hocus Pocus as well.
What a film festival that lineup would be.
Oh my God.
Sounds
awesome. Just so much over the top wild stuff happening. I mean, that's what happens when you get Sam Raimi involved, right?
Yeah,
I mean,
exactly.
You know, come on. One thing I'll kind of just throw out there as far as closing thoughts, we didn't really bring up the music note battle, which is just... So cool. Awesome. And to me, that is like the perfect melding of like over the top Sam Raimi and yeah, it's a Disney movie, you know, like we're getting both sides of that, you know, maybe a little Fantasia or something like that. And there is another.
Yeah,
piece.
That would have been a good puzzle piece. Throw that in there. Absolutely. No, that was one of those sequences. Where it was like, this is happening in a movie.
Yeah.
And it's not because of the violence, because of how weird it is. Like, I'm surprised that they let it slide.
Yeah, and that's what I wanted from this is for Raimi to get to be weird. I mean, how often is Raimi going to get to, you know, have this kind of budget and have, you know, the ability to basically do anything you can kind of throw your mind to, but then he doesn't really because he's kind of also beholden to, you know, it has to fit the template of the whole Marvel thing. So it's kind of a little yin and yang kind of situation, but there's enough good here. Also, we should talk a little more about Pizza Papa.
It's over. Yeah.
That I was so happy at that final end credit, maybe the best end credit scene of all time of any of these MCU movies, when Pizza Papa finally stops hitting himself in classic Evil Dead 2 fashion, yells at the camera, "It's over."
I was waiting kind of half expecting fists to come out from all corners, like the skeletons in Army of Darkness, just like out of nowhere, like six fists come and punch him. And I love that it works as a litmus test for people watching this movie who are Sam Raimi fans or people who are Marvel fans going to see it, and just like some people reacting and some people being like, "I don't understand. Why is that such a big deal?" And to those people, I say, shame on you.
Yes.
Educate yourselves. We just gave you a list of films to watch. Yeah.
Well, I think that's a good place to wrap it up on Doctor Strange. Is there another movie you watched recently you'd like to recommend to our listeners?
Actually, for my show, Franchise Detours, I think the next one we're going to be talking about in the next episode I'm posting is on the two sister act films from the early 90s. And these are movies that I haven't seen in 15 to 20 years. And they're both a lot of fun. The first one, especially, I was like, damn, it's a well-written film. I had a really good conversation with Phoenix from the Film Code podcast about those two movies. And I feel like it's one of those movies that a lot of people are just, younger people might be just writing off. It's like, Whoopi is a nun. I don't need to see that. I'm like, there's more going on here. Yeah. I think, and that movie was like legit a phenomenon in the early 90s, was everywhere. She was nominated for a Golden Globe and it became now a stage musical. So Sister Act 3, I think, is coming up at some point this year, next year. It's unclear on Disney Plus. So it's in the Disney realm because that's a Touchstone picture.
That is primed for a legacy sequel. Yeah, that's kind of perfect. Yeah.
Exactly. And they're on Disney Plus. So when you're done rewatching WandaVision, go over and watch Sister Act and get ready for our episode on Franchise Detours on that.
Nice. Absolutely. And tell people where they can find Franchise Detours and everything else you're up to.
Yeah, you can find us. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and a whole bunch of other podcatchers, as well as crookedtable.com. Franchise Detours, where we look at movies one installment of a time. We just finished Spider-Man, filmed by Sam Raimi. I'm doing a few standalones, and then I'm doing the 8 theatrical Muppet films, which I have not recorded those yet, but I'm getting this process of starting to line those up. So though that should be a lot of fun. Talk about nostalgia. We're going to be mostly in the 70s and 80s and 90s with those. So that'll be a lot of fun. And I also have another podcast called Close Watch with Robert Yannis Jr. That's kind of on minor hiatus. I'm really kind of just building up Franchise Detours right now. But on that show, we get to know guests through the movies they love. And they can find those anywhere they listen to podcasts. And I'm on Twitter @CrookedTable.
Awesome. Well, Robert, thank you so much for doing the show again, and hopefully we'll get you back again sometime.
Absolutely. Thanks, David. This was a blast.
I'm Josh Bell.
And I'm Jason Harrison. We co-host a podcast called Awesome Movie Year.
Each season, we take a look back at an awesome year for movies, which is every year.
We deep dive into these specific years and we pick out why they were such great years for films. We go over the biggest hits, the biggest flops, the best picture, some personal picks, some cult classics.
Years we've covered in past seasons include 1994, 2003, 1977, and 1984, and we've got all of film history to look forward to. So check us out at awesomemovieyear.com or wherever you listen to podcasts. All right, so I hope you enjoyed that conversation about Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness. Thanks to Robert Yannis Jr. for joining me on that one. Make sure to check out his episode on Evil Dead 2 that I was on. We had a lot of fun talking about that. And yeah, that does it for today. I want to remind you, as always, to make sure that if you're enjoying what we do here on Piecing It Together, that you are subscribed wherever it is that you're listening. And if there happens to be a 5-star button, we'd appreciate it if you hit that. Maybe leave a little review. You could also follow us on social media at Piecing Pod. Join our Facebook group, Popcorn and Puzzle Pieces, where we continue the conversation about all the movies we talk about here on the show. And don't forget, we do have a Patreon, the Produced by David Rosen Patreon, where I post bonus and advanced content from Piecing It Together, from Awesome Movie Year, from my music career. Lots of great stuff there. As far as Piecing It Together is concerned, we currently have advanced episodes on Uncharted, The Lost City, which will actually be hitting the main Piecing It Together feed next week, Sonic the Hedgehog 2, and The Northman. So you can listen to all those right now if you sign up over at patreon.com/bydavidrosen. And then they'll, of course, eventually make their way to the main feed, and more bonus content will hit the Patreon. So yeah, if you really like the show, go check that out. And there will be some more music stuff hitting there soon. I'm currently in the middle of scoring a feature film and working on another album, and there'll be more and more snippets and, you know, advanced pieces of music and all that kind of stuff hitting the Patreon soon. Let's end this with a piece of my music, like I always do. Just trying to think of something that is kind of magical and crazy and multiversal for Doctor Strange. I'm going to go with a track called Wonder from my last full-length album, the self-titled David Rosen album. I love this track. This is one of my favorite pieces on the album. So I think it's a good fit for this. Hope you enjoy it. It's called Wonder. The album's out wherever you can find music. So go check out the rest of the album, and we'll be back with more Piecing It Together real soon. Thank you.
an All Points West production, produced by David Rosen in Las Vegas.